The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It's Thursday, September 19th, 2019. I am Michael Brooks. This is a Michael Thursday, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, journalist, healthcare analyst Natalie Shore on her new piece in the Jacobin magazine, Elizabeth Warren's healthcare plan still leaves a lot of unanswered questions. Why the relentless ambiguity from the Warren campaign on Medicare for All, the healthcare plan we need? U.S. drone strikes kill 19 farmers in Afghanistan weeks after negotiations with the Taliban have collapsed and civilian casualties continue to skyrocket. Bernie Sanders has set another gold standard, this time with the most bold, aggressive housing plan in modern politics, the goal of eliminating homelessness, structural restitution to the victims of foreclosure, and much, much more. Mike Pompeo suggests that an attack on Saudi would be an act of war by Iran, while Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, warns that the U.S. and the Saudis need to tone it down because this could lead to all-out war. You know that document that won't be released, that people are refusing to release from the DNI, a whistleblower that has led to a standoff between Congress and the administration? Well, the person named in that document is Donald J. Trump. Benjamin Netanyahu might be out of a job as Israel attempts to form a new government, but no end in sight for the 5 million Palestinians who had no say in electing the government that controls them. Though good news in the rise in vote share for the joint list, which represents Arab civil rights. Trump names Robert O'Brien as the new national security advisor. He does, in fact, seem significantly less crazy than a demented John Bolton who has went back to his anti-Muslim conspiracy group after getting kicked out of a job. Nearly half of Bermuda is without power, as Humberto Kitts. And the student loan crisis, not ongoing U.S. military adventurism, has helped the Army exceed recruiting goals this year. We truly are in a profound hellscape. Anti-Semites are using a popular chat app to compile a list of Jewish people. That's great.
It's a tech industry, folks.
It's a tech industry. Lot of innovation.
Help with connectivity.
Jesus Christ. All that and much, much more on today's Majority Report. But let's start with Donald Trump, reporting by Ken Klippenstein from TYT Investigates, shows literally from whistleblowers inside ICE. These are people that work inside ICE, and they're so appalled by the just absolute inhumanity and grotesqueness of the war against refugees waged by the Trump administration and ICE, and all of the preventable deaths that are being caused by the Trump administration and ICE. They've actually been blowing the whistle on the conditions there. That's one part of what's happening, the most significant part of what's happening by far. And then there's the fact that Donald Trump continues to both be, you know, a fool, but also, frankly, weirdly formidable. As in, people need to start thinking a lot more carefully about who they might want to put up against this guy, because a general election is not a Democratic primary, and his mode of sort of looseness and appeal, it has a political appeal. You know, obviously he's lying and this is ridiculous, but this is just sort of an example of Trump being Trump, and it works for a lot of people. This is two different clips. First, he's at the border and he's basically just bullshitting about other countries supposedly coming to examine the wall. Now, he could be totally lying, and then as I think I don't remember whether it was Matt or Brendan pointed out in the prep. I mean, of course there could be fascistic parties from Europe or elsewhere for that matter that might be fascinated by learning about this. But
hey, Garrett, you can check out the Grand Canyon as well.
Exactly. Check this out.
And people that have seen it, other countries are now coming, as you know, and they're studying the wall because other people are thinking about something. The only thing is, I'm not sure that they can afford a wall like this. This is really, I will tell you at a certain point if I get their approval. We've had three of them already. They're coming and they're studying the wall. But I'll let you know if I can get their approval, I'll give that. Who is that, Jeff? I'll give you that information if I can. I want to ask their approval first.
Yep. Guess you have to follow etiquette. Gotta be respectful.
But it's three countries that you'd be impressed by.
Believe me.
They were.
They might not have much money, but they've got legacy prestige. And then Donald Trump, you know, this is funny because he kind of is gently corrected by this general here. And he responds well to it. But it reminds me of an old story that Artie Lang told in the Howard Stern Show, where he went to Atlantic City and he roasted Donald Trump. And he said things like, I remember he was belligerent and drunk, and he made like these really great, like cheap jokes, which were exactly how you should go after Trump. And it was the height of I watched this last year. It was at the height of Apprentice. So he looked at Trump, and clearly he's just totally drunk, Artie. And he looks at Trump and he goes, hey, Mr. Trump, you know who's fired? Or like, you know who should be fired? Your stylist. You're fired. And then he made a joke, when Donald Trump was drove Ivanka around Atlantic City, and he said, I want every building in the city to be named after you. And then Artie said, well, that's really sweet, and maybe if Ivanka marries a member of the Borgata family, that'll happen. Now, Trump sat there and laughed and said, and was like, he's a funny guy. And then like 2 years later, he was on the Howard Stern Show and was like, Howard, this guy's a loser. I won't talk to him, and was super pissed about the bit. So maybe this general's days are numbered is what I'm trying to say. But it played out this way in the moment.
Maximum that you could do. And one thing we haven't mentioned is technology. They're wired so that we will know if somebody's trying to break through. And you may want to discuss that a little bit, General.
Sir, there could be some merit in not discussing that.
Okay. I like that.
I'd like you to reveal a national security secret. I mean, it's kind of cool though, because he did just also reveal how ridiculous most of classification is. But you know, it's all just self-licking ice cream cones and bureaucratic games. But that was really funny. But as I say, he was good-natured about it in the moment. But who knows in a couple of months if he's like, that was totally disrespectful.
If you want to beat Trump in 2020, you should start working to elect Bernie Sanders.
I mean, seriously, folks, it's time to get serious, because, I mean, Joe Biden's leaking oil. Earnest wonkery nerdery is not going to do it. I mean, whew, I'm getting scared. I was of the opinion about a year ago that if the conditions were in right place, that pretty much anybody, you know, from Bernie to Biden to probably a Warren, probably a Harris could beat him. But the more I watch this campaign shake out, you know, I don't want to bank on there being a recession. I think that this is going to be extreme, and even a recession might play to Trump's advantage. So we got to start getting serious about the electability and how to actually take this guy on. I agree with you, Matt. All right, we're going to take a brief break. And we are going to come back with Natalie Shore on the Majority Report.
Yeah. your own. It's just someone came undone. Everything you had between the lines is just another giveaway. You're always the last one to know. We're finally close when you first walk away. There's something about how you go that makes me feel everything you wanna say. Whether we're fucking around or just feeling it out. With every role that you play, the revolution televised. There's a time and a place. Don't tell me that it's paradise. Everything you hide between the lines, just another giveaway. Well, we could always leave this town.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here at the helm today. Joining us now is Natalie Shore. She's a writer and researcher and author of the just published in Jackman piece, Elizabeth Warren's Healthcare Plan Still Leaves a Lot of Unanswered Questions. Natalie, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Natalie, before we get into this, can you just reset us as to why, in spite of all of the rhetoric, all of the attempts to confuse the issue, why, from a policy and I guess clearly a moral standpoint, why do we need Medicare for all, period? Why are all of these other sort of halfway steps and confused hybrids insufficient for actually solving the healthcare problem?
Sure. So Medicare for all, and there are, you know, two different bills that envision a single payer system, one in the Senate and one in the House, and they have some differences. But I think that the important thing about both of them is that it guarantees healthcare free at the point of use without any cost sharing, premiums, co-pays, deductibles. And so that essentially guarantees access to healthcare for everybody without worrying about financial barriers, without worrying about financial trade-offs. And also offers an efficient mechanism to eliminate the administrative costs that exist in our system now and would exist in a lot of the hybrid systems, because you have to hire armies of billing people, of coders, people to negotiate prices, all of that kind of thing. So in terms of a system that includes everybody, that provides care free at the point of use, and is able to control costs and run away administrative spending, it's really the best system and the only system uniquely capable of doing all of those things.
And broadly, and maybe we'll end with Elizabeth Warren as we sort of get more specifically into her, but how are multiple candidates, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Harris to a significant degree as well, how are they sort of, I mean, you know, Joe Biden is clearly saying, I don't support this, right? And he won't acknowledge it. But even, I mean, he's saying things as delusional and disconnected as, hey, it's just $1,000 copay. That's not too bad, right? I mean, just like, yeah, right. That's very easy for people. I mean, we, how many studies do we need of how many Americans can't afford an emergency $400, but $1,000 copay is nothing. So he's, you know, and his plans would leave millions uninsured, but he doesn't claim to cover everybody. He just sort of fear mongers about single payer. But a lot of other candidates, like, you know, Medicare for all who want it and so on, how are they distorting the meaning of this phrase in a detrimental way? And then I guess specifically, how is Warren doing that as well?
Sure. So, yes, as you've pointed out, Biden's plan basically includes a generous public option, which means that buying into a public insurer will be one of many choices you have, whether it's, you know, automatic enroll or set up on the state exchanges of the ACA. So that, you know, it's worth noting that that would be marginally better than the status quo. His system that he's proposed on the campaign trail is explicitly not, doesn't offer universal coverage. It is worth noting that people who have promoted the Medicare for America system forwarded by the Center for American Progress, that is a system that has universal coverage. Everyone's covered. Uninsured people are automatically placed into this new public insurer system. I believe that they said that Medicare and Medicaid would be absorbed as well. I can't remember off the top of my head. So those are universal coverage systems, but they don't offer healthcare free at the point of use, and they do preserve broad swaths of the employer-based insurance system, which means that you won't eliminate a lot of the problems associated with it. Things like surprise medical bills that, you know, there's been a lot of reporting of people who go to a hospital that's in network but end up being treated by say, you know, an emergency physician or an anesthesiologist who's out of network, and then they get billed for that and they have to pay out of pocket. There's a lot of issues that demand out-of-pocket payments for insured people that are part and parcel of the employer-based insurance system. There's a lot of cost sharing that people aren't necessarily aware of until they get sick. And there's also the idea that, you know, if you preserve premiums, if you preserve cost sharing, then people are, you know, forced to consider cost as, you know, one of a few factors. And a poorer person having to weigh cost versus health is going to have to make different decisions than a rich person doing that. And Medicare for All is striving to eliminate those trade-offs to whatever degree they can be eliminated. So I think that, you know, borrowing the Medicare for All has never been a perfect slogan. I should back up and note, you know, the Sanders and Jayapal bills have used it because I think that, you know, single payer, which is essentially putting all healthcare money into a single public pool, that is able to cover everybody and capture unique efficiencies that other programs don't. That's not exactly what the Medicare program is, but that is the closest referent for an American audience. So Medicare for All is kind of a quick way to describe it. So that's, you know, kind of the original sin rhetorically of what the single payer movement has done. And I think that, you know, they did it for compelling reasons. I'm not saying that that was necessarily the wrong choice, but I do think that you know, that opens people up to points like the Medicare system does retain a significant role for private insurers. It does have cost sharing, ergo other systems that have these features can also be described that way. And I think that it's really confusing for people who aren't completely in the weeds. Warren's plan, you know, I think that the problem there is that she was a co-sponsor of Sanders' bill in 2017 and has started using the phrase Medicare for All more often and, you know, particularly demonizing the role of private insurers in our system as it exists. And I welcome that. But what she hasn't done is been specific about whether or not she'd, you know, solely and enthusiastically promote single payer system or something closer to Medicare for America, which, as you describe, is, you know, Medicare for all who want it or something close to it.
And she was saying specifically, you say that her website basically still indicates nothing about whether people will be automatically absorbed by the new program, whether currently existing public insurers would be, and whether or not it's supported by premiums, taxes, deductibles, or copay, or how the central or how central role private insurers would play in the healthcare system, and whether or not patients fight with them. So, again, be really specific about all of the doors that she's leaving open to, and maybe juxtapose that because, you know, her rhetoric, all, you know, she follows Bernie in terms of, right, like, first, it's a plan, but now she's mimicking the movement language. Then there's, you know, when she first launched her campaign and Sanders wasn't running, she was completely in the language of access. And it was actually quite stark because she would put these really, you know, these solid kind of populist attacks on Wall Street and then sounded, you know, extremely third way when it came to healthcare. So can you kind of track the language evasion, maybe, or that element of it with being really specific about, you know, those details, in fact, because that is the difference between people just getting actual full no bullshit coverage versus, you know, some system that still, you know, leads to an enormous amount of inefficiency and suffering, even if we're calling it something, you know, like Medicare for All.
Sure. So, you know, I think it's worth noting that this part of her website, the healthcare section, didn't exist until about a week ago. Mm-hmm. So now it does exist, but it still leaves a lot of questions. You know, the Medicare for All bill that Sanders co-authored is very specific on all of these questions. And she is a co-sponsor, but doesn't, you know, specifically indicate on her website that that's what she's talking about. So I believe the language on her site is we need a Medicare for All system so that, you know, nobody goes broke. Everyone gets the care that they need and there's no more arguing with insurers. You know, this would definitely fall within the penumbra of a lot of things that Sanders' single payer bill would promise, but doesn't necessarily preclude other plans. You know, no one going broke is great, but I would argue that it's not enough. And it's a far cry from, you know, no one facing medical bills or everyone getting healthcare free from the point of use. So it doesn't mention anything about cost sharing, that being, you know, healthcare bills that are foisted onto patients as opposed to taken care of by insurers or taxes. So those would be your deductibles, your co-pays, and in some cases, co-insurance, which is spending a percentage of an overall cost, you know, picking up a prescription and paying for 20% of it as opposed to a $20 copay or whatever the case may be. I would argue, you know, eliminating cost sharing is important because if you're trying to build a comprehensive healthcare system, the fairest way to do that, I would argue, is to distribute costs based on ability to pay, which you can do through a progressive taxation, mm-hmm. as opposed to by health status, which is what cost sharing does. It foists costs onto people who use healthcare, which disproportionately punishes sicker people, poorer people, women, things of that nature. So I want to eliminate that. You know, the language that she uses, I think, seems intentional yep. to hedge, to leave some of these questions open, to avoid alienating people who might think that single payer goes too far. The word single payer is never used. It's always Medicare for All on the campaign trail and on her website. She also includes incremental reforms on the site, which I think, you know, Sanders, me, and I think a lot of other people would argue that incremental reforms aren't a necessarily bad thing. Of course, you know, when you're in electoral politics, that inherently involves, you know, making compromises at times. But it's confusing to see, you know, those compromises forwarded as part of a healthcare platform on a website that's supposed to exist to forward, you know, a robust campaign vision. And so it's really tough to, you know, really discern what specifically she's going for, what specifically she's going to fight for as a candidate and as a president.
How important has it been, that sort of murky rhetoric from Warren and others, that sort of, you know, kind of takes relatively marginal examples to sort of say, like, well, we could have government health care, but you can still have a private insurer if you want, and there's, or private procedures, and people use these examples like plastic surgery or whatever. And I have to say, I mean, first of all, I think that actually gets into, you know, certain tricky territory too, because I mean, there's even things that are quote unquote, you know, cosmetic that actually might be extremely important. They might even affect somebody's like job prospects, as an example. So I don't even, you know, I have a pretty fundamental problem with that premise as well. But at the end of the day, they're still relatively marginal to like the real meat and potatoes of healthcare. And it sort of has undermined, at least for me, it's sort of undermined, I think, the clarity of, you have a, you know, something not as ambitious, but something more like when you think of like the NHS, which is you just go, you get coverage.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no nonsense. And even with much more government intervention and patient protections, there's still a huge amount of nonsense for overbilling, for inefficiency, for wasting time, and for, you know, basically money getting funneled to parasitic third parties that provide no value.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people like to point out that most systems in the world do retain some role for private insurance, and that's true. I think that the thing that we want to achieve is that the public insurer pays for all necessary care, and that doctors who bill the public system can't also bill, you know, duplicate plans. So, you know, that's a situation that you get in South Africa, that there is a public plan, but there are also these, you know, duplicate private plans that sort of create a two-tier system, and a lot of doctors can just opt into that system. In Canada, that happens less because doctors can't, as of now, bill a private plan that offers duplicate coverage as a public plan. So I think that that's really the important part. The cosmetic surgery thing, I'm not really aware of any private insurers that offer cosmetic surgery. In Canada, they offer things like, you know, you can get a private hospital room as opposed to being doubled up if you have a certain private plan. I think some of the private plans cover prescription drug costs, which aren't covered in every Canadian province, although I would argue they should be. So I think that, you know, we have a very extensive healthcare system. There are certain, let's call them perks, that I think I would feel comfortable allowing private insurers to participate and offer if people want to pay extra or if employers want to offer that to their patients, but that they can't get a leg up on actual necessary care, that should be through a public system, and that we shouldn't be creating multi-tier systems of access with private versus public plans.
Well, let's then get to the, you know, other areas that I think you and I would agree are should actually definitely be part of that. Things like mental health care and dental, which Sanders and Jaipal do cover. What is your read? I mean, I noticed, at least when I read it a week ago, that there was even a kind of distinct language around access, again, that access word on mental health coverage. When there's already so much ambiguity about the base, how do you read this with regards to the more fully fleshed out healthcare needs of people like dental and medical and mental health as well?
Yeah, so it's funny, you know, I mean, access, I think, as a word in and of itself isn't necessarily insidious or problematic. I mean, I've certainly used it before. I think that the problem is more when you combine the idea of, you know, access to affordable healthcare, I think is a lot more nefarious than access to healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to create a better performing market or to tweak market incentives. I think that we want to create a robust public institution that provides for people equitably is, you know, how I look at it. So that does mean access to healthcare when people lack access now. I think that, you know, access to a better priced product is, you know, the language that I prefer to avoid. You brought up, you know, dental and mental health care, which are absolutely less accessible aspects of our healthcare system now. Dental inequality is a very serious problem. You know, I think maybe around 50% of people lack access to dental health care. They're not insured. And even, you know, dental insurance that does exist tends to be, you know, a relatively low cap with a lot of dental procedures being paid for out of pocket. And, you know, it's a very silly situation based in some, you know, historical accidents that came about. Teeth are just as much a part of your body as anything else. And oral health is an important aspect of overall health. Mental health is definitely the same way. You know, there are currently hypothetically laws and protections about treating mental health and physical health similarly under the healthcare system. But that isn't always the case. There are sometimes very narrow networks, and mental health professionals don't necessarily participate in any insurer plans, let alone public insurer plans. And so that's definitely something that we'd want to address in any robust public system to make sure that people are able to get that care, and that though dental care and mental care aren't treated differently than other forms of healthcare.
So it's clear and objective reality, right, that Sanders is 100% clear on this. You know, Biden is not even anywhere remotely where we need to be. And then there's just all of the ambiguities and vagueness and problematic tendencies that we've outlined in Warren's positioning and language and so on. And that sort of leads, I think, to a really interesting conclusion of your piece, which is that it's, and if I'm interpreting you correctly, it's one thing to even say that, and, you know, it's a political environment where, you know, obviously she's competing against Bernie Sanders. So she's, you know, significantly changed her language in the last couple of months. They've put up the healthcare section on the website. All of those are obviously really strong indicators of basically that even if she does eventually adopt and replicate the Sanders position, you have to question the level of commitment and political capital that she would be willing to spend. And I want to really kind of, you know, broaden this out, because this will be an absolutely Herculean effort. I mean, there will be ungodly sums of money spent by these industries to destroy this. Some people are very fixated on the institutional restraints and things like the filibuster, which are, you know, they have, of course, they're important, but they're going to completely pale in comparison to, I think, frankly, a president who will go across the country in a relentless bottom-up fight to get this done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the only way that there's even a prayer of this. I mean, the institutional stuff's important, but second order. So when you look at, I guess that's my sort of question for you, is that, yes, we want her to continue proving on this position. Maybe you even have some good ideas for tough questions that she could be asked about this so she could stop being so vague on it. But is it already fair to conclude that just on a level of, you know, if you're voting on this issue, all of the markers of ambiguity have already been pretty clearly laid down in terms of who's willing to, you know, spend capital on this, essentially?
Yeah. I think that sort of leads me to this idea that I feel like when comparing Warren and Sanders or their politics, I've heard a lot of people frame it as, you know, Warren as the pragmatist and Sanders as the idealist. And I just think that is not at all a good framework. I think that Sanders has been in electoral politics as an independent socialist for decades. Like, there are few people who understand the pragmatism of electoral politics better than he does, which is sort of what I was saying about, you know, incrementalism en route to a vision. I think that it's important to, you know, draw your lines in the sand and make your case so that we understand, you know, who's going to fight for what, whose ideal vision is what, because the fact is the candidates have different, you know, as a kingly dictator, all of the candidates would do different things. So I think that you need to know what frameworks they're operating in to know what they'll go to the mat for, what they'll fight for, what hills they'll die on. But also because, yeah, as you note, we are very far from passing any of these plans. Gosh, I mean, even Biden's most incremental, inadequate plan is still very far from being able to be implemented right now or even in 2020. And I think that, you know, pragmatically, the thing that's going to get any of these plans, let alone the best and most robust public ones, we need a movement. We need outside agitation. This isn't going to be a matter of, you know, simply working within the electoral system and voting for the right people and, you know, making sure that they have a majority, although those things are important. we need a way to build that from the outside and make that more possible. And I think that Sanders right now, from where I'm sitting, is the only candidate who appears to understand that and is certainly the only candidate who is going to fight tooth and nail for a robust single-payer Medicare for all healthcare system. I think that having allies like Elizabeth Warren is incredibly important. You know, she is, it's important to note that she is far better on healthcare than a lot of her primary, probably all of her primary rivals, save for Sanders, in that I don't think, knock on wood, I don't think that she would veto a single payer Medicare for all bill, but I don't think that she's going to, you know, pull it forward either the way that Sanders is going to pull it forward. And at this point, where the movement is, I think that that's what we need. We need people who are going to be champions, who are willing to lose friends over it. And I just don't see any indication with all of Warren's hedging that at this point seems deliberate. I don't think that she's going to fight tooth and nail for it. And, you know, voters should understand that.
Well, that's 100% right. And I think there's also another really important point that you made too, which is that, you know, it's a bit frustrating because people really need to get a lot more grounded and, you know, like sort of power centered in their analysis of what pragmatism is. So you're right. I mean, this is somebody who, you know, been a mayor, congressman, senator, you know, dark horse, successful presidential candidate. Like, you're not doing that as a pie in the sky person. So that's, you know, that's ridiculous and can be dismissed easily. But the broader point is that, I mean, even if we go back several short years ago, that the most industry-friendly, not even public option, very, very problematic for middle-class people, you know, Obamacare, but still actually put some literal just consumer advocacy restraints on this industry, they went to the mat and almost destroyed Barack Obama's presidency over. So, you know, it's stunning with the same fundamental power dynamics in play, the same money, the same fact that, you know, Nancy Pelosi just formally said she opposes Medicare for all yesterday, that people still think that there's some type of legislative or congressional or, like, you know, 60s homage to LBJ movie version of how any of this stuff gets done. I mean, across the board. I mean, now, you know, obviously Sanders is putting out more and more, you know, amazing proposals on things like housing, but even a much smaller project. I mean, as you said, I mean, this smaller Warren project, even the smaller Biden project is going to take literally everything that an administration has and then millions outside of it. And people need to understand that that is, in fact, the pragmatic understanding. Everything else is, you know, I'm sorry, that's like Aaron Sorkin stuff. It's
happening. If you are going to have massive opposition to any of these things to get the, you know, ball over the fence, you're going to need the system that mobilizes the most people, that excites the most people, that's going to enlist the most foot soldiers in this fight. And that's Medicare for all, that single payer.
Definitely. Natalie Shore, everybody should read everything you write on healthcare and much else. I really appreciate your time. The book, excuse me. Well, there should be a book, Natalie, but as of
now,
as of now, Elizabeth Warren's, believe me, I understand, Elizabeth Warren's healthcare plan still leaves a lot of unanswered questions. It's in the Jacobin. We have a link on the majority.fm site and all the different ways you can follow Natalie's work. Natalie, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Take care. All right, folks, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the fun half where we'll take some calls and some IMs and talk about sound and blah, blah, blah. I'm, as somebody who's struggled a lot with housing growing up, I'm moved by Bernie Sanders' housing plan. We're going to get into the details of it. I don't even know if I want to acknowledge. Somebody told me that some bizarre, extremely stupid, disturbed person with a weird obsession with the Clinton family on Twitter said something dumb about Bernie's plan, but I probably won't pollute such an important segment by talking about such a deranged person. Try to keep it elevated, try to keep it about people being in their homes. We also have a bunch more sound to get to and a lot of work. So become a member of the Majority Report today. Majority.fm/become a member. That's how this ship runs. That's how we are unbossed and unbought. Do you see? Matt, what's going on at Literary Hangover?
Yeah, check out my podcast, Literary Hangover.
Check out my podcast, The Michael Brooks Show. You can do it on patreon.com/TMBS or The Michael Brooks Show on iTunes. We will see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell of a lot of back.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black. African. And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black.
Pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.